Hi, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott. Back to the three-man pod with Chris Baines and Matt Oper. How's it going today, Chris?
It's going pretty good. We're 2-1, and all hopes of the victory bell going to Oxford is pretty much snuffed out for the next, half decade at least. Matt, how are you feeling about that?
I still don't know what I saw.
Yeah, it was all just a big blur there in the last, 2 minutes of that game.
Yeah, I was in my apartment cackling like a madman at 11:30 p.m. at a volume that was not at all appropriate for the hour. But what can you do? It was the dumbest thing I've seen. I mean, I've seen some pretty dumb football, 2007 USF game, for example. That was pretty dumb. But the last 5 minutes of that game was something else. I will never forget it because of how dumb it was.
It was pretty all-time level for a complete massive choke job by Miami. And really, it's the Luke Fickell era can go anyway. But this is always going to be one of the major highlights because it was such an improbable win. When Clemens is walking in the end zone, it's what the hell just happened? How did that happen? What is this game? And then Miami drove right down the field anyway to make it even more crazy.
Yeah, I like to think that Malik, arms wide, spinning around, I think he was looking for flags. Real? For real? For real, bro? Oh my God. And that's my internal monologue for him. I'm sure it was something different.
Yeah, so let's recap that. So 2nd and 5, Miami, not unsurprisingly, runs it up the middle. They get stuffed, not unsurprisingly, as well as the front seven played. And for some reason, Chuck Martin, instead of doing what every other coach in the history of football at all levels does, he, instead of calling a timeout, he issues to the ref that he has the intentions to call a timeout, that he's planning to call a timeout, and he lets the Miami get a delay a game on 3rd and 2, and he obviously goes apeshit on the sidelines. It's 3rd and 7, and instead of running the ball again, Gus Ragland throws a pick to Malik Clemens, who strolls in the end zone for the easiest touchdown of his career. What's going through Chuck Martin's brain in those few plays? I don't understand.
Let's take this in parts, because what you described in a minute is going to take about, it's going to take us 20 minutes to parse. So let's start with the timeout part. It is common in coaching for a coach to go to the ref and be like, hey, I'm going to call a timeout at X time. Usually it's 1 second on the clock. So Martin goes, probably has a conversation. But it's strictly not necessary for him to make the gesture, but it is common practice to make the gesture, and they will assign it at that time, right? So he has a conversation. He's like, I'm going to call a timeout here, because obviously that's what you do. You run it down to one, and then you call the timeout. Except he never made the gesture, and because he didn't make the gesture, the official was not honor-bound to adhere to his request for a timeout, I think, is how this works.
Well, he never actually, as far as what I saw in the highlights, he told the ref beforehand, and then he just walked away and didn't even pay any mind to actually calling the physical timeout at 1 or 2 seconds left, which I don't get. How are you a head coach at the D1 level and you just let that slip through the cracks?
I don't know. You have to think he's done that before, many times where he just never called timeout and they call timeout anyway. That's one of those things you never actually see it happen. You always think they'll get the timeout somehow, but then the referee just went by didn't use the coach honor code or whatever and just let them get a delayed game. That was one of the weirdest things I think I've ever seen in the game, and then it just kept getting weirder.
Well, I've never seen a coach. Obviously, it's common practice for a coach to prep a ref ahead of time that, he has the intention to call a timeout. But it's not on the ref to call the timeout for the coach. The coach has to sit there and call, stand next to the ref and call the timeout. Like, that's coaching 101. That's basic coaching.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've seen anytime basically any other coach does this, they stand right next to the side judge because that's usually the person closest to him. So they're like,
right.
Yeah, timeout now. But what Martin did was I was watching the game last night. He had the conversation, and then he walked 10 yards away. And then when the flag gets called, he turns with this bewildered look at the ref. And you can't see this, but I'm turning in my apartment.
Okay. And I'm like, envisioning it.
What the fuck? I'm sure he said more than that, but like he did the whole arm shrug thing while yelling at him. It's like, this is kind of on you.
That's what, like, that's the only thing that gave me the impression he's done it before and, like, the ref went by it. Because other than that, like you said, they always stand next to the guy. Even if they don't, like, signal it, like, they go, okay, timeout now. And then they go do the timeout.
I mean, maybe he's kind of gotten away with that in the past, but you would think in such a critical situation, I mean, what do you have to do that's more important than calling a timeout that's 10 yards away? Like, take 5 seconds, stand next to the ref, call a timeout, and get your punt team out there. It's not complicated.
Yeah, so anyway.
I don't know.
The timeout was not called. Delay of game was assessed. We go to 3rd and 7. Now, given the score of the situation, I might just run it. And like, I know I'm not going to get it, but I'm just going to run it. If I'm Chuck Martin, I'm going to run the ball there. Granted, I ran for like 10 yards in the second half, so it's not going to work. I'm aware of this. But a failed third down conversion and a punt, you're still winning that game 90% of the time with the offense the Bearcats have. Just call it what it is. You punt, you win.
Right.
What do they do, Chris?
Oh well. They call a pass, and Gus Ragland throws into double coverage, and Malik Clemens strolls into the end zone, and UZ wins. To sum it up in 5 seconds, I don't get that. Like, it's a minute what? It's a minute 10 when they snap the ball, something like that. Like, this is just for round numbers, minute 10. Let's say he actually calls the timeout, or let's say he runs the ball, calls the timeout. It's, I don't know, what, 30 seconds left? Then he punts it away. It takes 5 seconds or so for the punt to get there, assuming a fair catch. And UC is working with, what, half a minute to drive at least half the length of the field? Like, I don't put that on Hayden Moore's shoulders with the game he had, or the receivers, or the offensive line, etc. Like, I don't know how Chuck Martin sees the flow of the game and thinks, yeah, let's go for the first down here on our own 7-yard line.
Yeah, there are times to go for, like, oh, let's be aggressive and go for, like, the dagger play. The play, like, they were running was, like, I don't know, just, like, ill-conceived. And Ragland, like, 100% couldn't make that throw, and he made that throw anyway. Like, if you're going to throw it on, like, the third down, don't you have to do something, like, a lot more conservative? Like a screen or, like, a flare to, like, a running back? Just to make sure you catch it and, like, keep the clock moving? I just didn't understand the play.
I mean, I don't know. I think that play was pretty conservative, because even if they completed it, he was short of the first down sticks. So that's pretty conservative. The 3rd and 7, he ran a 5-yard route. But there's two parts to that. So, one, he had a guy in his face right away, because I think it was Marquise Copeland who destroyed the same dude he was destroying all night long. It was just in his grill right away. And the second part about this, the part that I love the most, is that Malik Clement stayed in a 3-yard by 3-yard box and never moved. And just sort of reached in front of the Miami receiver and just kind of like took the ball casually and just sort of jogged into the end zone. Like, he didn't move. He was standing in the spot where it was thrown the entire time, and he just never saw him.
Yeah, it's incomprehensible. I don't understand it. I mean, just play calling, the choice by Ragland to pick that particular receiver and then to go a step further to actually throw to that particular receiver. There's just It's run the ball. I mean, the only good choice there is to run the ball, but I guess you have a few other options in the passing if you really wanted to go passing, and I don't know what Miami was doing. That was their shot, and they blew it.
You would think, like somebody on the sidelines, when, like, oh, if you're pressured, just throw it away, because it doesn't matter if you get grounding, it'll be fourth down. Like, he wasn't in the end zone when he threw it, was he? I don't remember. I don't think he was.
I think it was only like a two. I think it was like a three-step drop. So I don't think it was.
No, it wasn't in the end zone.
You could take the grounding. Like, just don't get throw a no. terrible interception.
You could do anything but what they did. That's why it's so funny. You could do literally anything. Like, you can fumble the snap and fall on it. Better outcome.
Honestly, they probably should have just punted right there. I mean, if you run it, you risk losing a few yards. Maybe your punter is sitting in the back of the end zone. I don't know. I mean, he might as well just punch it on third down at that point.
It's like you guys said, like whenever Clements was in the end zone, he was looking for a flag, like something happened. Like, oh, how did this crazy play happen? Were we offsides or something? No, it was just one of the worst play calls to end a terrible sequence for Miami. After, like, it seemed the whole fourth quarter, like, went their way until that one play.
Yeah, you can literally do anything but what they actually did, and they would have won. That's why this is so amazing.
Because the only reason they were backed up so far is because their guy, like, mishandled the kickoff, and they started their drive at the 5-yard line.
Oh, yeah, let's not even talk about that. he fumbles the kickoff, that one thing that he can't do, and runs it out. Why would you run out of the end zone? Sit there. Ugh. The pressure got to him, apparently.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like they were in position to win this game, and they just had, like, what do we do? It's like they just had no concept of how to get out of this. It's like, we're right there. It's like, all you have to do is take one step. One step. It's like you're climbing a mountain, and you have to take one step to get to the top. And you get to there, and you're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to slip, fall, and roll down this hill. Because I think that's going to be more fun. It's going to be a better story. You're right. It is a better story. But you didn't do the thing you, like, set out to do. So it's a funny story. I mean, it's great. Like, Seinfeld could make a great bit out of this. But you didn't do the thing that you, like, were trying to do. And have been trying to do for literally a decade.
Yeah, and, like, this was, like, they had the game won. It's, like, really, like, hard to, like, get through, like, how much Miami just had this game won when they were up, what, like, 17-6 with under 5 minutes left, even after UC scored, like, the only good offensive drive of the game. Like, all they had to do was just go 3-and-out at, like, the 30, and the game was over, pretty much. And they did the worst possible scenario with special teams and coaching and offense. Just, like, one of the most, like, complete collapses and, like, choke jobs, like, you could ever see. It's like, it was almost a work of art.
Oh, it was. And my favorite personification of this work of art is it's on the ESPN box score for this game. I don't know if either of you have seen this, but as part of the new ESPN box score, they have a win expectancy, right? So the entire time, like, this entire game is like Miami 90%. And when it gets to be 17-6, it spikes at like 98.6, right? And this is in the fourth quarter. And then it stays in the 90s, just steady chilling in the 90s. And then in the last 3 minutes, you just see this graph go straight vertical. For UC, is one of the most amazing things I've seen in a graph. I'm like win expectancies, generally, they don't go vertical. Like, there's no vertical axis for win expectancy graphs. But there was for this one, because we made history.
Yeah, I think Nick Colosimo, fan of the podcast, might say, I think he tweeted out something like, they had like, what, 0.4% chance of winning when it was 17-6? And it was like the most improbable winning percentage of a winning team that weekend. It was just nuts.
Yeah, it was It was something.
Like, you can't, like, here's the thing is, like, if you look back at, like the body of that entire game, like, people could have gone to bed at the end of the third quarter, and rightfully so, thinking that UC was not going to pull that upset, and woken up in a completely different dimension, and not even realized that UC won. Like, that, it didn't make any sense. Like, nothing about those last 2 minutes made sense.
But just, like, checking through, like, your Twitter timeline, you could see the number of people who claimed to, like, have turned the game off, like, in the third quarter, or even, like, into the fourth quarter. Just because it was really a really awful game for UC. And it just looked like they were just going to get kind of, like, skunked by Miami until the magical five-minute ending. It's like, after the targeting, like, where Perry Young got ejected after it looked like UC had, like, Miami, when UC did have Miami stopped, and that drive continued, like, it's really, like, how did they end up winning? They never win those games.
Yeah, I mean, it's, the funny thing about this game is UC dominated the second half, like, for real, on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
But because they were so unspeakably bad in the first half on offense, it just didn't seem to matter. It was like they were so much better, but they put themselves in such a deep hole that they could never dig out of. Funny thing about that, somehow they managed to dig themselves out. I don't know if they actually dug themselves out or did, like, Miami throw them a nice rope ladder. I'm not sure of the metaphor.
Yes, and I would say both. Yeah, I think, well, Miami fucked up. I mean, let's not even pretend that Miami didn't fuck up. The defensive line was dominant all night, and they had their way with Miami's offense in the second half. And I mean, to Hayden Moore's credit, I mean, that second to last drive where they where, you know, they ended up bringing it back to within a field goal. I mean, he looked fine. He actually completed five passes in a row, which I don't know if I've ever seen that from Hayden Moore. So, I mean, Miami definitely blew the game, but UC doesn't win that game unless they actually rise up and win it for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
I mean, I guess in a broader sense, is this, like, how many games during the Tuberville era did they let victory slip through their grasp, and they essentially grabbed defeat from the jaws of victory? Where on Saturday night, they did the exact opposite. I mean, is this a sign of good things to come? I mean, we at least know that the defensive line is going to be excellent this season and only going to get better next year. For the course of the season, though, I mean, is this going to be kind of the trend? Like, closer wins than closer losses, I guess? I don't know. Like, I'm trying to make broader, overarching conclusion game three, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but I don't think you can do that with this team, because we all knew September was going to be tough. It was going to be a rough go for this group, because new coaching staff, a lot of young players, they were not accustomed to playing with any sort of aggression or passion. Or, like, I hate to go to that cliche, but it's very true of the Tuberville era. Like, there was just nobody was in charge. Everybody was just hanging out. It wasn't, there was no accountability. There is accountability with the staff, and that is different. But this is a team that has to learn how to win again. Right? I mean, because even before 4-8, like, this was a program that was not winning the tight games. They didn't know how to come through in those moments. They would beat up the teams they were supposed to beat, but they weren't, you know, they weren't punching above their weight like they used to. And I think we're going to get to the point where this team can do that, but that's going to be in late October and November. Like, this team is going to be so much better in November that, like, no one wants to play. No one's going to want to play them then. They're just going to be better. And I think that goes for the offense as well, because we did see some positive signs in the second half. I mean, like, it wasn't – you kind of have to squint to see them, but they were there, I mean, the running game in the second half was great. The offensive line played probably their best half of football of the year. Doakes and Warren are really talented backs. And even if Mike Boone is not healthy the rest of the year, they can win some games riding those guys. Yeah, but there is the lingering quarterback question with this team. I mean, there's just no way around it.
Yeah, first time since, I think, October 15th of 2015, the Miami game when they came to Nippert, that UC beat an opponent when they were the underdogs. And that's just an incredible stat. I mean, you got to figure through most of the last two seasons, UC was an underdog in a lot of games, and they haven't won one of those in 2 years. And it's just, that's just unbelievable. And it speaks to the staff. I mean, it speaks to the culture that Fickell is establishing here. And you can kind of start to see some of the fruits of that labor, you know, coming to bloom here. I don't know if a Tuberville coach team scores a touchdown to make it close. And I don't know if the Tuberville coach team has a defense that rises up and continues to play hard in the last 2 minutes of that game to force an interception. I doubt it. I think a Tuberville coach team lays down in the at least in the fourth quarter, and Miami scores at least another touchdown.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to project some of this stuff, but we can wildly do it anyway since we will know everybody else is. But it just seemed like the mentality from the team last year was like once things started getting down, like they just kept going down, and like they didn't really rebound at all, like to your point. And like it seems like even if like this team doesn't end up going 10-2, like this was definitely one of those games that gives you confidence for the rest of the season. Like, no matter what situation you're in, you can come back because you did it before. Like, if they're in a tough situation against Navy this week, you can look back on this and know you can make plays down the stretch because your guys have come through in the past. I think, especially defensively, we talked a lot about the defense, stepping up and, having to win games. And the defense definitely won this game. After, Miami's only big drive of the second half was aided by a penalty. Granted, that was a bad penalty. But, they didn't really do anything the second half. And UC scored a defensive touchdown. And, with the turnovers on offense, the offense really moved the second half. It's just they are still terrible at finishing drives, which was one of the worst things they did last year. And I think that part is not a great sign for the future, but you just have to hope that they start finishing drives a lot more consistently, or it could be, I don't know, just a frustrating time for a lot of these games. Even if they win, it could still be frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, this team is very one-dimensional. And, the defense, when we had the preseason preview, I was talking about how if the defense can get to perform at, a top 40-ish level, the offense doesn't have to be that good for them to win enough games to get to a bowl. Well, the defense is playing at a top 40-ish level, and the offense is playing at a top 110-ish level, which is bad because there's not that many teams in college football. And, they're just going to have to win ugly games. Because I don't see how this offense is going to get markedly better.
I mean, schematically, I think they're doing the right things right now. I think watching the last few weeks, I think Denbrock is doing, for the most part, the right things. Things as far as play calling is concerned. I don't, and this goes back to our conversations of the last few months, Hayden Moore is just not my guy at quarterback. He stares down receivers. We've said it over and over and over and over again, and it came out against Miami. And how many almost picks did he have against Miami? I counted at least three or four to go against the one that he actually did throw. This offense will go as far as he will take them, and I don't know if I really hope Ross Trail gets healthy is all I'm saying. I hope he's healthy enough to really challenge Hayden Moore in practice on a more consistent basis. And we start seeing more Ross Trail here, hopefully Marshall game and on.
But to add to that, Hayden Moore, had his like flaws, but the receivers still dropped a ton of passes in this game as well.
Oh, Devin Gray, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Short touchdown, and they still had like five other drops, if you're being, I guess, conservative. That part's still frustrating. Like, you hope the receivers turn it around. Like, they still have to pick up their play. Like, Lewis had a really good game. But, like, you need to see definitely more consistency up and down your receiving line.
Well, it's very difficult for the receivers to be consistent catching the football if they have literally no idea where the football is going to be. I'm not defending the receivers and the drops and Devin Gray and all this, but it's like, how you cannot prepare for what Hayden Moore gives you is what I'm saying, because even the balls that are caught are 3 yards behind. He's making guys stop. He making guys do full 360s just to make the catch. And it's like, good offenses, they get the ball into the hands of guys who can do stuff with forward momentum so that they have an opportunity to make a play. Like, Hayden Moore robs them of any opportunity to make a play because catching the ball becomes the play. Like, that was fine in the 50s, but this is not how offense works today. And he just is so inconsistent. His ball movement is all over the place. And so, like, I have sympathy for these guys when they make bad plays and drop obvious balls, because they are so shocked to see a catchable ball coming over their shoulder like it would from any other quarterback. They're like, oh, my God, this is amazing. What do I do? Oh, fuck, I dropped it. Like, it's human, and I get that. But it's just like they have – Hayden Moore is not – like, the receivers aren't helping them, but Hayden Moore is not doing them any favors because he makes, like, a routine flare pass. He makes it into something spectacular that, you know, Khalil Lewis makes a 360 and dives into the end zone. It's like, well, yeah, if you threw it in front of him, like, because that's what happened in the Michigan game. But, like, if you throw it in front of him, he just walks into the end zone. But instead, he has to do this amazing pirouette and then dive and get into the end zone. It's great. But, yeah, like, it's a flare. It should be it should be in front of him to run onto. That's how that play should work. But that's not what's happening. And is no shot. Like, Hayden Moore's numbers are atrocious. He is averaging 4.3 yards per pass attempt. 7 is good. Like, 7 yards per attempt is good. 4.3 is unspeakably bad. And it's just hamstringing the offense because there can be no consistency. And without consistency, you can't be efficient. And because they're not efficient, like, there's just no explosive plays because the defense can sit on everything. Everybody knows that Hayden Moore has no desire to throw anywhere but, you know, numbers and out about 10 yards deep. That's where he's comfortable. And that's just, it's hamstringing the offense.
Yeah, and to go along with that terrible yards per attempt, his completion percentage is hovering around 50%. Then against, like, the two, like, really good and one decent team you played, he's thrown back-to-back two interception games. And, like, all four interceptions, like, at different levels of incredibly brutal.
Yeah, he's not playing with confidence. And how could he? Because, I mean, he knows what he's done. He sees his stats. He knows they're not good. But there's... And this is the other part. There's no other option, and he knows it. I'm not sure that helps or hurts.
Well, I mean, based on evidence, it's definitely hurting. I don't think if a healthy Ross Trail is fighting him in practice, I think Ross Trail wins. I mean, granted, we don't know a lot about Ross Trail right now. He's only played a handful of snaps, and of those snaps, some of them didn't really end that well. Like, his first collegiate pass that ended up in a pick. But from what we know about Hayden Moore, he stares at receivers, he throws behind receivers, he'll have a few good passes here and there. He's the mark of inconsistency. I mean, is that really what you want at quarterback, or do you want someone who... Maybe he's a Wolverine, but he has higher upside. He has a much higher ceiling. And we don't really know what he brings to the table if he's the starter on a consistent basis.
I will say the one upside to more, like, knowing he was the man was, like, he could have, like, looked over his shoulder at halftime of the Miami game and kind of, like, maybe justifiably been benched. Like, he did play better the second half, like, for the most part. So, like, I guess in that sense, like, he knows there's no controversy, so he doesn't have to, like, beat himself up when he, like, is terrible for a half. Trying to look at the bright side on that one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, especially during the Tuberville era when they had the musical chairs at quarterback, I would hope that Fickell is having a conversation with Moore and saying, hey, if you're not playing well enough, we're not going to pull you, or, he's being open enough about the quarterback and to let him know that, if he's allowed to make some mistakes. I would hope.
If this was last year, there's a 1,000,000% chance he would have been benched.
There's a 1,000,000% chance he will be benched by the end of the year. Because this level of quarterback play is not sustainable.
Right.
Like, you need... Like, he was very good as a true freshman when he had excellent skill talent around him that elevated his level of play. But that's not this team. This team needs a quarterback who can elevate the people around him, right? Like, they need the quarterback to do that. He can't do that. It just is what it is. He is not that guy. He is not going to make these receivers look amazing. He's not going to make these receivers look like the Shaq Washington, Mikhail McKay, Chris Moore group. It's just not going to happen because he doesn't have that in him. And that's fine. Like, you can be a functional, serviceable quarterback being that guy. But you need to have a philosophy kind of built around him so that he isn't the be-all and end-all. They need to have more from everybody, really. And the running game, I think, is where it's going to end up, where they're going to have to end up leaning. But for right now, it's just... Like, they're asking him to do things that he can't do. They're asking him to carry an offense, and that's not him. He can carry an offense if the offense is comprised of nothing but really, really good college football players. That's not what he has right now. That's not a knock on him. It's just he's got an incredibly young and inexperienced group that he's dealing with, especially up front. And the offensive line played great in the second half. It was against the Miami defense that's really not all that great. We'll see if they can continue in this vein and continue to get better, because they're going to have to, because they're going to have to lean on the running game a lot. Like, UC is so bad on offense right now that it's just very difficult for them to string together three first downs in a drive and change the field position a little bit. And with this defense, that's kind of what you need from your offense, and they can't even get to that spot.
I mean, you would just hope that, playing the optimist card, you just hope that the fourth quarter was a sign of better things to come. And, like, to your point, I mean, we're not asking Hayden Moore and this offense to put up Brian Kelly-like offensive numbers of 40, 50 points a game. Like, with this defense, all you need is, like, two touchdowns. Like, guarantee us two touchdowns. Everything other than that is gravy. But the problem is like that, even with the ball that low, it seems like it's difficult for the offense to really even get there. But you would hope that after the fourth quarter, what they put up, they're starting to build on some of that, and they're actually getting to that point. Which is really, really sad to say that the bar is that low and we can't even get them there. But hopefully they can, and we just build on that.
I wish I could subscribe to the building theory, but I can't.
I mean, the fourth quarter that the offense put up, that was the best quarter this season.
Yeah, and
sure. I'm definitely subscribing to the recency bias of that being the last quarter we've seen of this offense, but it was still their best one, and I don't know. I'm optimistic. We're not asking for the offense to do that much. We're asking for the offense to, like you said, put a few good plays together that gets them a few first downs every drive and put, guarantee us two touchdowns a game. That's not asking for the moon. I'm hopeful that they can do that on a consistent basis. I don't know if they're going to do it against Navy, probably against Marshall, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you would think it's not asking for a lot, and but I don't know. Like, the problem with finishing drives still stands out. It's with how well they moved the ball this entire second half. Take out where they should have punted on their first drive, and somehow went for it. Which I still think is weird. I don't know why, Luke Fickell decided to say, we didn't actually mean to do that. But anyway, they miss a long field goal, red zone interception, get a field goal, in the red zone. Then they get the touchdown on their last offensive drive. So, you would like to see, more consistency when you get down there, four times. But, with the defense it's been playing. Miami finished four drives in UC territory. That's pretty good for a lot of college teams, especially where Miami started a lot of their drives in the second quarter. Miami started drives at their own 41, 38, 42, and they went three and out, three and out, three and out to end the first half. And their last touchdown came when UC didn't get the fourth down. It's I don't know if you can really rely on your defense bailing up much every game. So I don't think some of the offenses in the league are going to be as inept until you get to the end of your schedule.
Yeah, and we're at, 35 minutes of this podcast. We have mentioned only in passing that the defense is very good.
Right. Well, that's good. It's not a hot topic, right? It's almost they're so good that just chalk it up to another good defensive performance.
No, but 2 years ago, this most of these players were turning guys loose for 70-yard touchdowns at a whim.
Oh, and no doubt. I mean, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that's just the state of this defense, is that they're so good that it is not something we need to really bicker about. Bicker about the offense until we go blue in the face, but the defense, we all kind of disagree on. Yeah, they're really good. Hopefully they're still going to be as good in November as they are right now.
That is a good point, though. Defense has matured, a ton, the past couple of years. Right, this team is just going to run for 200 yards against your defense. There's nothing you can do to stop it. If you can't stop the other team's run, you're going to lose. We saw so many times, and the run defense was pretty excellent. Miami had one long run. Copeland had three tackles for loss. Kevin Muhan had probably his best game as a Bearcat with two sacks and another tackle for loss. It was almost a pretty dominating performance by your defense.
Yeah, and Cortez Braun didn't really show up in the stat sheet, but that dude is a fucking monster. He is unbelievable.
Yeah, and his play it pretty much won the game at the end where he got pressure on that fourth down.
Yeah, and what I really like about this defense and the way they've constructed it, and I'm going to get super nerdy for about 5 minutes, but bear with me. This defense is perfectly constructed for the league that we're playing in, right? Because this is a league full of teams that like to spread you out, force you to make plays in space, and they rely on, speed more than anything else, because with the way recruiting works, schools at this level, they can get speed, but they can't usually get power and speed, right? So what's the solution to playing a bunch of offenses with really fast dudes who like to play in space? You basically play four safeties, and that's what UC is doing, right? They have one actual linebacker. Jalen Byron is a linebacker. Perry Young, love him to death, not a linebacker. He's a safety, right? Tyrell Gilbert, definitely a safety. You know how I know this? He started as a fucking safety all last year, right? But he's an outside linebacker now. So they are flooding the field with speed so they can stay on their base defense the entire time. And that is allowed to be ultra aggressive against the run and against the pass. And because of that, they're very efficient. They stop teams on first and second downs very well and get them into passing downs where they do okay. They're not the best at that yet. But because they're so aggressive, they get a lot of big plays, but they also allow a lot of big plays. But I just think this is the perfect approach to playing defense in this league with this many high-powered explosive offenses, because there's not many teams in this conference, especially in the East, who can match with, you know, with their athletes in space. Like, UC is going to win a lot of games just because they have better guys playing in space making plays. And I think it's just the perfect philosophical approach to, you know, how to approach this. And we all had questions about Marcus Freeman and what he was going to do as a first-time coordinator. I've been very impressed through three games.
Oh, yeah, it's surprising what you can get out of talented players when you have a coaching staff that's mildly competent and knows what they're doing. I guess the question is sustainability. And we know the linebacker position is you know, one of the lightest areas on the defense. But to your point, Matt, I mean, they're basically rolling in faster, smaller, essentially safeties and nickelbacks into that role. So to kind of mitigate that issue. The defensive line, they have some rotation there. They definitely have depth at defensive back. I mean, is this sustainable throughout the season? Possibly? I guess we just don't really know yet.
Oh, I think it's absolutely sustainable because they're just, like, they're, this is still a young defense. They're getting better, and they're getting better every week. And you look at a guy like Brian Wright, who has come out of nowhere to start, right? But he's 6'3". 250, long athlete. He's got as many pass deflections as any as the defensive backs, and he plays defensive end. Like, you know, Mark Wilson, who was a starter for 2-3 years, is now a spot pass rusher. Like, that's his job now. Like, he doesn't start. Yeah, when you can do that to a guy who has as much proven production as Wilson, like, there's so much depth up front that I don't have any issues thinking that they're going to be able to sustain this level of play for the entire year, given good injury luck, et cetera.
Well, I want to agree with you, except I don't think we've really seen them tested by a very good offense yet. So, maybe they might not face one the whole entire season. Like, because Michigan, like, had some big plays, and, like, they put up some yards. But, like, their offense definitely wasn't running well when they played UC. Like, obviously, Austin Peay and Miami are really not much to boast about. Even though, like, their performance against both, it's a pretty good indicator of how good their defense is. I guess it really comes down to, like, Navy, you know what Navy's going to do to you. And, like, then you have to see what you do against the Florida offenses and, like, SMU, really. Because then the rest of your schedule is a bunch of garbage teams and Temple. So, like, I
guess... Temple's garbage. Let's call it is.
Well, this is the benefit of playing in the East. You don't have to play that many offenses because you get UConn, which is UConn, and Temple, which they're good at defense, but not really offense. Oh, and ECU sucks this year, so that's helpful.
And, like, Tulane isn't, like, great shakes either. So, like, maybe by the end of the year, like, this team should definitely make a bowl, like, for sure now. They should win at least one more game before they hit the last four.
No, they should absolutely sweep Temple, ECU, and UConn. There's just no way. With the defense that's playing this well and only getting better, There's just no way I see them losing to the last three games of the season. Like, I was questionable on Temple, but Temple is just awful. Like, they've fallen off a cliff with Matt Rhule leaving.
Well, I think we all underrated how good PJ Walker was. We're all like, if PJ Walker could pass really well, they'd be fine. Turns out PJ Walker passed pretty well because look at his skill guys. Like, those still haven't gotten that much better. Other than, like, they can recruit running backs and offensive linemen. That's about it. And their entire philosophy is predicated upon being able to recruit running backs and offensive linemen. So that kind of worked. But eventually you do have to score points a little bit as the Bearcats are learning.
The only reason I'm not willing to bury Temple is they play them so late in the season. I'm just going to make Temple getting somewhat better.
But, yeah, no, and that, I think that's fair, especially with them starting with the new staff as well. But just, I got to figure UC just gets that much better. Like, I don't think that the trajectory is going to be the same for Temple as it is for UC at the end of the season.
Why is that? Like, they are, don't they have, like, pretty much the same profiles, though?
I don't know if Temple's defense is as good as it used to be. Like, they were, I mean, Notre Dame, I mean, you're not, I mean, that's kind of an outlier there. But, I mean, they struggled to beat Nova and UMass. Like, the offense isn't very good, and the defense, I don't think is that stout as it used to be. Like, a Temple defense just shut out Nova and UMass. And said they allowed 13 points and 21 points, which, you know, in a vacuum doesn't sound like that many points, but the Temple defense of the Rule era, and Adazio, and et cetera, I mean, they're shutting those teams out. This Temple defense is not that good. And if the Temple defense isn't that good, then Temple's just not going to win that game.
To that end, Temple finished in the top 25 in S&P defense for like 5 years in a row. Right now they're 50th. When the model of your entire program is play stellar defense and then figure out the rest of it, and you're not playing stellar defense anymore, it's kind of problematic.
Well, I guess we'll find out a lot to that extent, because tonight they play South Florida. So if they shut out South Florida, I'd be like, oh, look at Temple. I predicted they would get better. Like, and if they get blown out by like 70 points, I'll never mention this again and never give Chris credit for his calling Temple's decline.
I mean, on the flip side, I mean, who knows what'll happen with UC's offense? I mean, they could completely crater the rest of the season, and I mean, I wouldn't be especially surprised. But
how can they crater? They're in the crater. They're at the bottom of it.
Dig themselves a deeper hole in the crater. Dig themselves greater than the crater. Like Inception, but just with craters.
So you're in the crater, you're on the bottom living, and then another meteor comes and digs a bigger crater, but you survive? This is all very confusing.
It makes sense. Just go with it.
Yeah, craters, Matt, within craters within craters. Got it.
You have to subscribe to the theory it always gets worse. Then you can like be like, oh, the offense can get worse.
No, yeah, because we saw the first like two drives against Michigan. That was the bottom.
But when there's 130 teams and you are 125th, last I checked, that could be wrong. There's really not that much further to go. I mean, y'all are pretty much all our teams are just kind of hanging out down there.
You can always aim for historically the worst offense ever. You can go for the record books. You don't have to settle for being 130. Can be the,
yeah.
Can be number 130 all time.
This Wait, is wasn't... UC. There were entire teams that didn't score for a season. Okay, that's a lie. But like, they would score 5 points a game. So the bottom is very bottom, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I mean, last season when they didn't score for what, like 13 quarters or something like that. Or I mean, they didn't score a touchdown for 13 quarters. I guess you could call that relative bottom compared to this season, where they're actually getting in the end zone. I don't know. Yeah. This kind of deviated to a very depressing talk about offense.
Offensive touchdowns in all quarters, or games. My bad. Games. Yeah, games. Not quarters. It'd be better if it was quarters.
Would be better if it was quarters. But we're not there yet. We have to actually get consistent drives, which is, I know, asking a lot of this offense, but yeah.
Especially in this weekend coming up when they play the Naval Academy. You see, in second week in a row, they open up as a significant underdog. Unlike last week, the line has only gotten higher. They're 11.5 point underdogs to Navy. Do you guys think that one is justified, or do you think like it's still like Vegas looking down on UC after like an admittedly not great performance and a miracle win against a Miami team that I guess people don't think is going to be that good? Or is Vegas sleeping on the Bearcats?
I think the line is appropriate.
Yeah, that's absolutely appropriate. Yeah, I mean, it's Navy. Like, Navy wins 8 games a year under Kenny Amatalolo rolling out of bed. And I don't really care what talent level there is on the Navy midshipmen. They just run that damn triple option offense, run teams to death, and that's just what they do. And I don't know. It's just Navy. I mean, they're always good every single year. That's just who they are.
Yeah, they are the most difficult team on the schedule for UC to prepare for because they don't play like anybody else. No one else runs this offense. No one else runs this defense. That's the other part that nobody talks about. Like, they run a 3-4. And, like, you know, Alabama is said to run a 3-4, but they have 4 down linemen 60% of the snaps. So is it really a 3-4? Navy runs a 3-4. Like, they don't budge from that. That is their identity. That is very weird to play against if you're an offensive lineman and you've been playing 4-man fronts your entire life. So, yeah, like, they're just a difficult team to prepare for because nobody does what they do the way that they do it.
Yeah, and, like, as a result, it's kind of hard to predict, like, some Navy games because it's all dependent on how well, like, their option is working. Like, in the games where they can't run the ball or even, like, run the ball to, like, a lesser degree of success, like, you definitely have a chance to beat Navy. Because Tulane had a great chance to beat Navy. But then, like, other weeks, they just, like, run right through you. So, like, it's really... I think this one is really contingent on the defense. So I think just with how Navy's offense... how Navy's defense is, you can put up points on them. Like, UC's offense, you should be able to score, like, 17 or 20 points. It's just you're going to have to get stops the other way. And that's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, but I think this defense is constructed about as perfectly as it can be for facing this kind of team because they are so aggressive about getting upfield pressure. And obviously there are risks to doing that against Navy because if you make a wrong read, it's just they prey on your aggressiveness. So, like, but I think they're going to be able to make enough plays up front with, you know, especially with the defensive tackles. Where I think they're going to get Navy in third and long frequently and be able to get off the field. Now, as for the offense, I really wish I had your optimism, Chris, that the fourth quarter was the turning point. But I need to see, like, 2 games of fourth quarters for me to get to that spot.
I know. When I say optimism, it's more like blind hope. Like, it's like, you know, getting a lottery ticket kind of hope. At this point, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think your odds of getting struck by lightning are still better than UC scoring 60 points in a game this season.
And that's the thing is, Navy's just not the team to make a turnaround against. Like, an 11.5 point underdog is probably where UC is going to be. Like, I don't see Navy putting up, like, 40, 50 points like they did against, like, FAU at the beginning of the season. But I don't see UC scoring more than a couple of touchdowns. They're going to lose by a couple of touchdowns, but they're also not going to score that many points.
I think there's a decent chance this could turn into kind of like a mini shootout where they both get in the 30s. I just don't trust.
Do you now?
I just don't trust Navy's defense that much, and I think like it's going to be the type of game where I don't know. I just kind of think that if like they're going to give up big plays, it would be against Navy. It's like Navy, like it seems like they always do like that thing where like they won't do anything, and like oh shit, they're throwing a deep pass and then it's a touchdown, and it just like breaks your spirit. At least that's what happens like every Navy game like I ever watch. And it looks like they completed like 5 passes this year, and like their one receiver has like 135 yards on 2 catches. So I guess that's a consistent thing with Navy still.
Yeah, I mean they live for the game where they don't attempt any passes. Those are their favorites.
And so, like, where are you leaning on this one, Matt?
Yeah, like, one of the ways to beat Navy is forcing them to pass. I mean, and does anyone have any confidence in this damn offense to force it into a shootout? Like, no, we're going to be on the defense, and it's that's Navy's... That's, you're playing in the Navy's game by keeping it close.
Yeah, well, I think UC is going to play into every team's game because they're just going to keep shit up, or they're going to get blown out. I don't think there's any other variations in how games are going to play out this year. I really think this defense has a great shot to impose their will on Navy. I mean, they're going to give up some big plays because they give up some big flashy plays. That's just how they are. They had some real big glaring alignment issues where they were just not adequately covering all possibilities against Austin Peay. They really cleaned that up against Michigan. They gave up a couple of plays, one of them on a jet sweep, and one big run by Ty Isaac. But other than that, they really buttoned down and played solid defense against Michigan. And they're going to need the same thing against Navy. Like, obviously, it's a vastly different problem because against Michigan, you had to do that because you were so overwhelmed physically at the line of scrimmage. That's not going to be the problem against Navy. UC is going to have the best athletes on the field. But the way that Navy plays, it punishes being too aggressive. And this defense has been very aggressive in the early going. I mean, they're racking up tackles for loss and sacks at a rate that we haven't seen in 3-4 years. That's very dangerous against Navy. I think it's going to be a close game. It's an old defense and special teams game where, unfortunately, UC just has one of the two because I can't rely on any of our special teams to do anything but give me a heart attack.
If you're going to bank it on like that, like Navy's special teams has been pretty terrible as well. Like, they've only attempted one field goal, so they clearly don't trust their kicker. And they're one of those teams that it's relatively close. They always go for it on fourth down. So you can expect that probably a lot. I think if you can force Navy into like a game where you have to like flip field position, you're in a pretty good chance. At least you have like an outside chance. Maybe. Hopefully.
Yeah, and I like what I saw from Michael Warren as a kick returner. I mean, he doesn't have the typical kick returner build because he's a bowling ball. But he showed some explosiveness and decisiveness, which is really the key with returning kicks. I just have no idea what to expect from the actual kicker, the kicker position. Like, are we going to be good? Are we going to be terrible? It looks like we're going to be terrible again this year.
That one is definitely a coin flip. We got pretty much a coin flip kick to kick. Sounds harsh, but it's kind of true.
Well, we could put it this way. Our kickers are very Hayden Moore in that you don't know what to expect when the football leaves the body part. Just no idea. Could be a perfect pass. Could not be a perfect pass. Could be a great kick, could be 30 yards to the right. No idea. Not even going to hazard a guess.
Yeah, so what are you guys' predictions for the game? I mean, I had them losing like 28-14, something like that. I mean, is there any chance UC like wins this game? I mean, Scott, Matt, you're more optimistic on like the defense keeping them in line, but I mean, do you actually have them winning?
No. 17-14 Navy.
I think it's going to be a little more high scoring. I'll guess 34-24 with Navy winning.
You have UC scoring 24 points.
Well, he did just say that he didn't watch all of the Miami game, so...
If Tulane can put up 21 points on Navy's defense, the Bearcats can do it, too.
Tulane's offense is way better than our offense.
Right, and they got that feisty, like, they have that feisty option offense. So they've got that janky, you know, offense that basically just scores points by being so funky. Like, teams can't prepare for it. Like, UC's offense is so vanilla and one-dimensional that it's just, it takes a day to prepare for it.
It could go even the other way. They could be terrible on offense and be down like 34-3. Then come garbage touchdowns. The old backdoor cover.
Now that's definitely more likely.
It's like, I don't know why I'm banking on their ability to finish drives after I just said that's a gigantic problem with this team still.
But, okay, correction. Tulane's offense isn't way better, but it is better. 117th. I think UC's is still 123.
Yeah, I mean, well, the problem with Tulane is that they played Navy, Oklahoma as two of their three games this season, so that probably skews the numbers just a bit.
Yeah. It's impossible to have faith in this offense at this point. Right. I need way more to have faith.
How much do you think it matters that Navy is coming off a very early bye?
I mean, this early in the season,
I think it makes it easier for Navy.
I don't know. This early in the season, I think you're better served to play games. It might hurt them. Maybe. I don't know.
Good. Their schedule is kind of weird, like in that sense. I guess because they have to have the bye late in the season for the Army game. So that's got to be a pain in the ass for their team, you would think.
Yeah, again, it's Navy. They basically roll out of bed and know exactly what they're going to do on any given week. Like, they just do what they do. They run that triple option offense. They've got the 3-4 defense. They just run it. They do what they do. I can't imagine, like, bye weeks affect that team that much. It's more time to prepare for any given opponent that they face after the bye.
So we're all leaning Navy on this one. Like, what would you put the UC's percentage chance to win?
I think they're at, what, like 20%, according to, like, ESPN's matchup predictor? I'd say that's probably about right.
I give them 30.
Like, the things that need to happen for them to win this game.
Disruptive defenses have a way of shifting, you know, odds. Because, like, this defense can make a lot of, like, very big, disruptive, splashy plays. And that's kind of what you need against an offense that is so predicated on being efficient and being just a methodical buzzsaw of an offense. So I think getting them into, you know, situations where they're facing 2nd-and-15 or 3rd-and-11 often is going to be a big key for this game. If they can get them to that spot, I think UC's got a good shot. But as aggressive as they are, they're going to allow some big plays. It just is what it is. Hopefully it's not enough. Hopefully they don't allow enough where it precludes any chance of them winning the game.
And to your point, I mean, UC's getting into those. I mean, they've shown early. I mean, it's only been three games, but they've shown early enough that they can force opponents into third and long situations. And that's what you want against Navy. You want Navy to pass. You want them to force the quarterback to drop back and convert his arm. Like, that's not Navy's game plan. Like, they're not built for that. And if you force them into those situations, that's how you beat them. And then obviously on the flip side scoring points, but I mean, who the hell knows if UC's going to do that this Saturday.
Opponent, you'd definitely have to worry about them going for fourth down even more. So, like, I think that has to be something that you put in your game plan. Like, you know, if it's 4th-and-3 or 4th-and-2, at any, like, plus position, they're going to go for it. So, like, I guess they're, like, a little different from the rest of the league in that sense. It's like they're definitely one of those teams, like, the more they play, like, the more they start wearing you down. It's hard to defend that option, like, 40 to game.
Which is why it's going to be important to get and convert third downs on offense, which has not been a strong suit of this team at all this year. You got to sustain drives just to give defense breaks, right? Because if you go three and out on three drives and Navy goes field goal, touchdown on those drives because you're getting progressively more tired, I mean, 13 points is a lot for offense to overcome. Damn. You just got to stop those runs.
Especially if you, like, long drive, then a turnover. It's like one of those backbreakers where your defense has to go right back out there and defend a short field.
Hey, you know what Hayden Moore is really good at?
What's that?
Long drives ending in turnovers. He's really great at those.
Hey, you take the good with the bad, right?
What good do you think of?
Twas joke. Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about, like, trying to rely on this team to put together 3-4, you know, first down, I mean, in the same drive, I mean, that's asking the moon. I mean, again, it's a low bar, but, I mean, this offense right now, that's asking the moon. That's the problem.
That is a pretty big problem. Now I regret my shootout prediction.
Yeah, but you just never know. I mean, that's the thing is, like, it's so early in the season that, I mean, they turn it around. Maybe they figured out how to score points and just get first downs over and over and over again. I mean, maybe the defense forces a few funky fumbles and pick sixes or something like that. Like, you just never know what's going to happen.
And it should be said that Navy does allow a generous amount of big plays. UC doesn't get those. So if they can get maybe three or four more 20, 30-yard big chunk plays than they usually do, which is usually like one, that gives them a slightly better shot.
And we've seen like receivers drop two potential long touchdown passes the last two games. Like, that just can't happen.
Yeah, why don't they high point the ball? Like, that's how I was taught. Like, you go up and grab it instead of just letting it fall. Because if you high point it, you got a lot of room where you can... Never mind. Let's move on.
Let's run through the AAC quickly. Last Friday, South Florida destroyed Illinois. Like, the best thing looked like in the entire season. Quentin Flowers was awesome. Does this make you worry a lot more about USF, like, now that they actually looked good for once?
Yeah, because their offense had been pretty crappy for the first couple of weeks. And the numbers still aren't great. They're still very average on offense, according to most of the advanced analytics. So... it's a small sample size. Maybe it was just Illinois is really bad because, you know, Illinois football, hand in hand. They can thank Mike Thomas. We certainly do. Thank you for taking Mike Thomas. Thank you, God.
Well, it's no surprise he's back at Cleveland State now. So,
hey, that's back where he belongs. He's in that action mode. That's where he's good. He's the rare person who is far better with fewer resources than someone who is, you know, when they have more. When he has more, he has no idea what to do. It's like, so I can spend money on, like, food and stuff for players? Yeah, we have a lot of money. But why would I spend it on food for players? Because they're big gentlemen, Mike. They have to eat.
Do they really, though? Don't they get money from somewhere else?
Yes, from Bagman. Boom!
We already talked about Temple and their win. Tulane got blown out by Oklahoma. East Carolina gave up, like, 59 points in a row or something insane to Virginia Tech. Like, are they the worst team in the country? Or at least, like, the worst, like, not, like, Mac team.
Yeah, because Idaho is, I believe, still a provisional member before they drop down to FCS. They are the worst full Division One team in college football right now. They're just really bad. Eastern Michigan is better than them. Eastern fucking Michigan.
That's saying a lot.
They have a gray field. It's gray. Sorry, let's go.
It also has a running track going around it like your average high school team. So, yeah, they're a good program.
I used to always, like, you know how the NCAA games had, like, that, like, my player mode? I would always pick Eastern Michigan as my quarterback to make a terrible team really good and win the Heisman.
Why would you do that to yourself? Why would you go through that? That's like 3 years of getting your ass kicked for, like, one season of work.
No, because you turn it around because you're so good and you run all the plays yourself.
No, I totally get this, Scott. Either of you know what Football Manager is?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, I love it. The best. So every time I buy the new game, I take a team in like the fifth tier of English football and then make them the Real Madrid of European football in 10 years. It's fun. It's awesome. I get it. I get the impulse. It takes a lot of time, and it does suck for the first couple of years, but then you're great, and you got all the great players. I gotcha, Scott.
That actually didn't work out. It was just I was the best player, and all the other players on the team were still terrible, but I for like 300 yards a game. Anyway, moving on, SMU got blown out by TCU, like 56-36. And like Gary Patterson was mad that TCU didn't hang like 80 on SMU, which I kind of felt bad for SMU after that.
It's a rivalry game, right? You're supposed to score a lot of points on them. We've forgotten that here.
Are we sure Chad Morris is good?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like you go with Chad Morris, and he's like what year two or three, and year three. So they look excellent against two pretty bad teams, Stephen F. Austin and North Texas, and they have a lead for a little against TCU, and then just shit themselves for like the second half. So, yeah, that's a good question. Like, they're going to win some games this year. I mean, they've got a pretty you know, manageable schedule. I mean, they're going to probably get to a bowl, but yeah, if Chad Morris is a long-term solution there.
And that one's hard to say because just like I don't know, but their defense is just so bad. Like all these years later, I know it takes time and whatnot, but still, it's like there's like really like not a ton of like visible progress when they play somebody good, outside of them beating Houston last year.
Yeah, but that Houston game was such a fluke. It's like they had these lucky breaks, and Houston played a bad game.
Yeah, maybe their worst game. The marquee game we probably should have mentioned first, but they don't play UC, so who cares? It's Memphis beat UCLA in a crazy game. One of the craziest games. They kick off the crazy weekend. They beat UCLA 48-45. Yeah, Memphis looked a lot better than they did in week one. It looks like they could definitely win the West for the first time.
Yeah, Memphis looks real good. Like, I mean, defensively, I mean, they give up points, but I mean, if you watch that game, I mean, they were getting in the backfield a ton. And I don't know. I mean, Memphis, if you're looking at someone out of the West, I mean, Houston looks solid still. I still think that it's still up in the air whether they're still as good as they were. Navy looks solid, but I mean, Memphis, I mean, they're right there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Memphis wins the West and this entire conference.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't expect it. And here's the reason why. At all fucking good, it's insane. Like, and I think at this level, in this conference, if you have one player who's at that level, it can make a world of difference, especially on defense in a conference where nobody plays defense. Like, I just think that they're going to get enough. Their defense is going to be so good, and that they're going to get enough from their offense that they're going to end up winning the division and the conference.
Yeah, I think that division is really just going to kind of purge itself. I think Navy's going to beat one of those teams. Don't know Navy's schedule, but I think they'll get one of them. Speaking of Houston, like Houston beat Rice 38-3. Kyle Allen threw for over 300 yards. UConn got destroyed by Virginia, which is not surprising. And Tulsa had three players rush for over 130 yards, and they still lost to Toledo 54-51 in a crazy game where they lost in a field goal at the last second.
Yeah, you don't go into the glass bowl and win. That's just that's a fact.
Do you think it's interesting how Tulsa's like changed their philosophy from being like crazy pass happy to, at least in that game, like insanely run heavy? They only attempted 20 passes. I guess if you have three guys running for like over 130 yards, you don't need to throw the ball that much. And I don't think President is that good.
Well, I mean, Tulsa is they're. It's not cool to be part of the Bryles tree anymore for very good reasons. but that doesn't mean that his philosophy on offense wasn't revolutionary and ahead of his time, because it was. Like, Baylor, at their peak, would take what you gave them, and that's it. Like, they... What are they... When they played North Carolina in the bowl game, they had, what, 700 yards and no quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Like, they will, whatever you give them, they will take, and they will take it for as much as they can. And Tulsa is very much in that mold where whatever you game plan, they'll not even try it. Like, they'll just do something else.
That should make them a kind of interesting team to watch the rest of the season. But you see them either, so... Yeah, UC does play them. Do they? Don't they? I don't remember. No, they don't. Who cares about Tulsa anymore?
That's great. Yeah, Tulsa's going to put up a ton of points on up teams, and they're still going to finish, like, third or fourth in the West. That's just how good the West is.
Yeah, they play a different sport in that division. And then Navy plays their own sport. Well, Navy play their own sport. They play the same thing. But, like, the West is just a different animal entirely. And these cross-divisional matchups are hilarious to me. Because are there two teams that don't share as any DNA as, like, Tulsa and UConn?
That's a good
like, show. They are barely playing the same sport.
I still think it's weird that SMU and UConn play each other, period, anything. Like, that one's just the weirdest one still to me. It's like, oh, we're in a conference where SMU versus UConn, it's completely normal.
Yeah, that's a thing now. Yeah, it's just, this conference is so weird. I kind of like it. I mean, obviously I wish the Big East was still around, or I wish we were in the Big 12. But for what it is, I mean, it's entertaining. It's not a bad neighborhood.
It's the best of the worst, if we can say that.
Yes.
Which I don't know if that's something you want to hang your hat on or not, but it's definitely the best of the worst.
And football-wise, it hasn't been nearly as bad as everybody thought it would be when the Big East fell apart.
No, yeah, it's solid. It's just we're not getting paid like it, and that's what pisses me off.
That's a good point. But like pretty much every year, you've had ranked AAC teams playing in pretty big games at the end of the season. Like, a lot of it was due to like Houston's like miracle rise out of nowhere. But, like Memphis had like that has been pretty consistent, and with Paxton Lynch, they were like top 25. Navy's been a top 25 team. Like Cincinnati had like their moments. So did Temple. Like, obviously, they just won the league. And now South Florida's in the top 25. So go AAC, I guess. Yeah.
Once someone finally makes an access bowl. Yeah, we can't have everybody at the top beating each other up and then no one making an access bowl. But that's a conversation for December.
That's a good point. Looking ahead to this week, South Florida Temple, we kind of talked about it earlier. South Florida is like a 20-point favorite. Do you guys see them taking it down by that much?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think they turned their offense.
Houston plays an interesting game against Texas Tech. They're 6-point favorites in that one. It's on like national TV, so an Ed Oliver showcase. How happy are you guys that UC doesn't have to play Ed Oliver?
I am
so thrilled. Our offensive line?
I am thrilled. Because that dude is... He's the best defensive player in college football. I believe that. He's just unbelievable.
Yeah, he has a lifetime worth of sacks if UC plays Houston this year.
Which I guess they technically still could. They're just not scheduled to play Houston. It's an AAC title game.
Yeah,
I guess you're right. Yes, there is a rare instance in which UC plays Houston this year. But, yeah, moving on.
Okay. Given what Rashawn Gary did to our offensive line, I don't really want to see another 6'5", 300-pounder that runs sideline to sideline. I think it's going to go well for anybody.
Let's see. Tulane plays Army. I don't really have any thoughts on that game. Do you guys?
Hooray option.
Yeah, a really low over-under of 40, like 45 points. Yeah, that should be... Yeah, that should be a bit of a snoozer.
Tulsa plays New Mexico. The over-under of that one is 67.5. Does it go over?
Yes. And I just want to state for the record that it's really weird that Bob Davey is at New Mexico. It's a weird concept for my
brain. Not only that, he's under like massive sanctions now for player misconduct. Like, what the hell?
No, that I can believe. That I got.
that jives, but then just the fact that he's just a Lobo, that's what's weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, anybody who's really seems very personable, here's my theory. Anybody who seems really personable and down home in a broadcast is just a really shady dude. That's my personal theory. Like, James killed 5 hookers. It was a mem, but I'm pretty sure it happened.
Oh,
did you say mem? Hang on a second. Wait, pause. Did you say mem? Is it meme?
I don't know. I never hear it said. We'll have to go to the judges. We'll have to go to the judges.
Someone who's in their early 20s should be able to correct us.
And they are. To no one. Or random people on the side if they're commuting.
Yeah, they're just like so disappointed in you right now, Matt.
And let's be real. That disappointment started a long time ago. It's not a new thing. It's been hanging out for a while.
It's just hit a new level of disappointment.
It's like, oh, come on, dude. Come on.
Should we just spin this into like saying how you pronounce GIF or JIF, whatever it is?
I don't have an opinion. I know what you mean either way.
I mean, I always used to like spell it out, so just to be safe.
This is like moving picture things online.
It's a JIF. Yeah, that's what it is. Alright.
We'll fast forward through the rest of the game and this insanity. One of the more interesting matchups, UCF plays Maryland. Like, Maryland's looked pretty good so far this season. UCF only like a 3.5 point underdog. But they also haven't played that many times this season due to the hurricane. So, do you guys think UCF could pull this one off?
Yes.
Yeah, I do, because I don't think Maryland is that good, because I don't think beating Texas means that much. Because that's basically their entire resume. It's like, oh, they beat Texas.
They did hang like a school record for points against Towson.
Cool.
highest scoring.
Well, hey now, Towson beat Mighty UConn last year, so.
Yeah, Towson is a good FCS program, so of course they beat UConn.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that boat. Like, I feel like Central Florida, even though they haven't, they played FIU this year, and that's it. I trust Scott Frost with that program. He's doing great things down there. I mean, they're dogs by about a goal. I think Central Florida wins that game. Like, it's Maryland. You don't put money on Maryland.
I do wonder for them, like, that is a long time off, especially so early in the season.
Like, well, it's not even time off. Like, they had to evacuate. They had to leave.
Yeah, it's like, have, like, their whole lives, like, thrown out of whack for a couple of weeks. But maybe they'll show some things. They almost beat Maryland last year with a OC team. A couple of garbage games. SMU plays Arkansas State, and Memphis plays Southern Illinois. Do either of those teams lose?
Yes, SMU does.
Ooh, on the upset.
The Chad Moore.
It's been pretty consistent and pretty good. And they almost beat Nebraska. Not that beating Nebraska doesn't mean what it did 20 years ago, but still. Like, they are vastly outgunned from my perspective, and they still almost won.
It, finally, the matchup's so good, they had to move it to Sunday. East Carolina at Connecticut. A, what chances you watch this game? And B, the over-under is somehow 65.
How in the hell is it 65?
I have no idea.
Like, they're going to struggle to score two touchdowns apiece in this game.
I think it's because they expect Iron Man to show up and score 40 points, so that the other two teams only have to score 25. I think that's why.
Jesus Christ, what is Vegas looking at? Like, didn't we look at, like, a couple of weeks ago, UConn was playing some team in, like, the... Was it... I can't remember who it was, but Jesus Christ. Like, 66 points? Like, come on.
There's no way that can be right. How could it be 65? ESPN is, I think, off on this one. The Nevada Washington State game is only 67.5. Like, how could this be as high scoring as that one?
Oh, come on!
I'm calling shenanigans on that one. If they somehow score,
that cannot be the over under. It's just not. It's UConn football.
That's what it says on their game on their.
And they're playing ECU.
On their game
so
ID
you know
page.
UConn's not scoring. So this formula and take, what, 59 points from ECU?
Well, I don't get it. Like, neither team has scored more than 27 points this year.
But
ECU... Like, so UConn's highest point total is 27. ECU is 20. You put that together, 37 points. How the hell do you fill in the gap to 65? Like, what's your formula that you get to 65?
You go the other way, where East Carolina is giving up 51 points a game, and UConn's giving up 29 points a game, and that's 80 points.
Yeah, they have not had the pleasure of playing one another. So
yeah, that's
going to
be fun at the end of the year.
They are going to get a lot of points because they're both very generous.
East Carolina is giving up 634 yards a game. UConn, playing much worse competition than two top 25 teams, has given up 536 yards a game.
UC would have to play two games, based on averages, to get as many yards as ECU allows in one. Math is fun.
That's insane. Before we wrap this up, do you guys have anything else left to add to this insane over-under to cap the insane ending to the Miami game and insanity in general in college football last week?
Nope, I got nothing here. Hopefully UC wins on Saturday. They probably won't, but you never know.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to be... I don't know how I'm going to watch this game because I don't get it on cable, but I'm going to sign up for YouTube TV. I think I can get it that way. free trial, right? How many of those do I get a year? One? Ah, shit.
But how many email addresses can you make, or do you have to put your credit card in?
I think you have to put your card in. I've not done it, but I'll let you know.
Just start signing up for a bunch of credit cards.
Yes, because that is a great idea.
Oh, that's how we end, with great financial advice for your future.
Yes, by all means, sign up for as many credit cards as you want. I have 10. Done anything bad. My life is awesome.